You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 261 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Batman 89 number 3, The Joker number 8, Titans United number 2, Blue and Gold number 3, I Am Batman number 2, Justice League Last Ride number 6, Superman and the Authority number 4, Strange Adventures number 12, Batman Urban Legends number 8, Wonder Woman number 780, Supergirl season 6 episode 14, Magical Thinking, Stargirl, Season 2, Episode 9, Summer School, Chapter 9, Titans, Season 3, Episode 6, Lady Vic, and Why the Last Man, Season 1, Episode 4, Karen and Benji. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. First up for DC news, Ruby Rose blew up the internet recently. Ruby Rose alleges toxic behavior on Batwoman set. Rose also detailed what they described as unsafe work conditions on set, including serious injuries to a Batwoman crew member who received third-degree burns all over his body during production. Rose also blamed the work conditions for causing serious injuries to other crew members and slammed the show for ruining Kate Kane. Rose concluded by asking fans to stop asking if she would ever return to the show. She says, "I wouldn't return for any amount of money, nor if a gun were to my head. Nor did I quit. I did not quit." Now, Warner Brothers Television released a strongly worded statement in response to Ruby Rose's attack on the show. Its producers and former co-star Doug Ray Scott, as well as the studio's former top executive. In the statement, Warner Brothers TV states that Ruby Rose was fired from the show, but calls Rose's account revisionist history, and says the action was the result of an internal probe into multiple complaints about workplace behavior against the actor. Such an investigation into Rose's behavior on Batwoman has long been rumored but was not officially confirmed until today. A production assistant who worked on season one of Batwoman backs the claims about Ruby Rose's unprofessional behavior on the set of the show. She showed up late most days, didn't have her lines memorized, and whenever she interacted with anyone below the line, production assistants, LX crews, grips, it was as though they were beneath her boots. She stormed off the set, she yelled at people, and whenever she interacted with any of us production assistants, we were disregarded as trash, as the trash we picked up. She was a dictator to work for, and having been nothing but a production assistant eager to get into the industry, she made me consider quitting. Finally, there was a tweet from Luke Fox star Cameras Johnson. He says, "Bat fam, you know I couldn't go a whole day without saying something. I love you all. Don't think I haven't seen all the love today. But yeah, fam, she was fired. And it is very hard to be fired when you're the lead. Imagine what you have to do for that to happen."
Yeah, Drew, I thought that last tweet was, I thought, the one that raised the best point, which was what I had been thinking, was like, if she got fired as the lead on a show, like, you really, really need to be doing something wrong. You know what I mean? Like, it's not just like you're firing, you know, some side character. You're firing the lead of the show. They have got to be screwing up something terrible. And trust me, Drew, I am sure that there is some truth to some of the things that Ruby Rose is saying. For her, maybe not. But I do believe that shows like, you know, the 22-episode marathons that CW churns out are not fun for production people. I'm sure that is true. But, I mean, No other actor left the show, Drew. Only her. I don't know. I have a hard time believing that her side of the story is the accurate one.
Same here. I have to agree with you on the tweet. When I saw that tweet too, I'm like, yeah, that kind of says it all right there. I mean, accidents can happen on a set, and maybe they need to have more safety measures put in place. But it sounded like there was more going on than just safety issues too.
I gotta say, Drew, I mean, we were obviously the initial story we got was a fabrication on both sides. But even then, I was really having a hard time stomaching the idea that, you know, well, the time commitment was just too much for me on the show. It was like, you had to have known that. You had to have known that that was going to be the case going in. And if you didn't, what world, what fantasy world are you living in? And I feel like we're seeing more of that, obviously, with the more accurate version of the story now. Drew, if... I mean, so many people have come out and refuted her story and brought up numerous examples of her terrible behavior, whether it was treating people like garbage, not showing up on time, partying until late hours of the day and then showing up late and not having lines memorized. If you're doing all of those things, what on earth are you doing bringing that back up? You know what I mean? That's the thing that I don't get. It's like, what world are you living in where you did those things? There are too many people saying that she did this for there not to be truth to it. Why, Drew, would you point the finger back at the show when most people have stopped talking about it, right? Like, for the most part, it's kind of gone by the wayside. Bring it back up when you know that you've been doing things that are not great. Like, why would you draw attention to that?
I know, that's weird.
And again, but I think rationally somebody wouldn't do that, which again just kind of points to the fact that I don't know her, so I don't want to make too many snap judgments, but like I just feel like she's living in this different world, Drew, where like she is just a warped view of what's going on.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you on that. All right, well, let's move on to our next bit of DC news. Brendan Fraser has been cast to play Firefly in DC HBO Max's Batgirl movie. I was surprised by that announcement.
Hey, I'm all for Brendan Fraser getting more work, man. He's so great on Doom Patrol. This is awesome. Let's get him in more DC movies.
Yeah, I'm excited about that too. And for our last bit of DC news, the Flash Armageddon trailer released, giving us a look at the first story arc in season 8. The 5-episode event begins November 16th. Just a few weeks.
I'm holding out hope, Drew, that the show will turn a corner back to some of its better seasons, but we'll see. I'm hopeful.
Yeah, the trailer showed a bunch of cool characters I want to see. Didn't really give us much about what the story is about. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see on that.
And that's, but I mean, obviously, again, it's a trailer, so... I'm not going to read into it, but that's sort of been the problem with the show the last few seasons, is it gives you these like things that on paper should be cool. They give you these characters that should be cool, but then they don't do any, like you said, they don't do anything story-wise with them.
So, yeah, we'll just have to wait and see on that. All right, well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Do you know how fast you were going?
Sorry, officer. One episode every 2 weeks?
2 weeks!
Did you also know you're carrying a dangerously heavy load?
Yes, sir, we do. We've got interviews, fight nights, film discussions, Desert Island DVDs, and lots more.
I think we've got to take you down to the station. You do not have to write anything, but it may harm the Cosmic Pizza podcast if you do not mention, when questioned, something you later wanted in the promo or feedbacks. Anything you do say may be used in said feedback.
Cosmic Pizza podcast is not about the cosmos, all about pizza.
We're back, but before we get into this week's comic book talk, we gotta let you know there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Batman 89 number 3. Harvey Dent emerges from the burning building carrying Drake on his shoulders. Harvey Dent is a hero. There's a parade celebrating Harvey Dent Day. Harvey is presented with the key to the city. And then 1 year later, Harvey Dent is governor. Barbara Gordon is commissioner of Gotham. And Bruce Wayne has confessed to funding a small army of mercenaries that were Batman. Then Harvey Dent wakes up to being pulled out of the fire by Drake and Bruce Wayne just before the building explodes. His face is scarred because of sulfuric acid. Harvey is taken to the hospital. Bruce Wayne is being hounded by the news while Drake is talking to Detective Bullock, letting him know that it was arson. He saw four guys in bat gear run off down the street while he was feeding his birds on the roof. A few minutes later, the police finds the suspect in a dumpster. Suspects that we know were beaten up by Catwoman last issue. While the arsonists are freed on bail, Bruce Wayne arranges for Harvey to get reconstructive surgery on his face in Switzerland. Harvey has another dream about the Harvey Dent who saved Drake. That Harvey explains that he is from another world and shows Harvey all the different possibilities his life takes. Harvey tells Harvey that you can literally split the universe in two with something as simple as the toss of a coin. When Barbara comes back to visit, Harvey asks for his two-headed coin. He takes a file and scars one side of it. Harvey is watching the news later that night, and the anchor talks about the soul of Gotham. Harvey flips his coin to decide the soul of Gotham, and the scarred side comes up.
Drew, I gotta admit, the first part of the comic definitely got me. I was like, wow, I really thought that he was going to become Two-Face in that fire. And then, sure enough, I was like, oh, no, he did.
Yeah, and I remember you mentioning it that last week. But that you weren't the only one that threw off, too. It was going into this other world. I'm like, where are they taking this comic? I mean, it's interesting. This was a different take. And then when it went back, I was like, oh, okay, the psych out.
Much credit as I want to give the psych out, which was really well done. I'm not totally sold, Drew, on the what they're doing with Two-Face. It's a little odd. Like I appreciate that they're trying to do something different, but this like almost perceiving multiple worlds thing is weird. I don't know about you, it just doesn't really feel right for the universe that it's supposed to be set in.
Agreed. I thought that was a little strange too. They started talking about the multiverse, because I agree with you. It does not fit in with the Batman 89 universe, and it did. It felt weird to me too. I'm wondering, are they going to visit it more, or are they going to drop it after this issue?
I don't know. This seems to be how they're kind of approaching the craziness of Two-Face. Is him perceiving, you know, obviously we always have had the split personalities, but they're almost representing it as like completely different people. Like the physical Harvey Dent we're seeing is just the guy that's scarred, but then there's this other Harvey Dent that only he is perceiving that's talking to him. I appreciate that they're trying to do something different. It's just not totally landing for me.
Me either. So we'll have to... I'll have to hold judgment till next issue to see how they continue this dual personality of his before I make, you know, final judgment on it. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week. The Joker number 8. Lady Bane takes out Interpol agent Isabella and kidnaps Jim Gordon. Lady Bane fights her way through the cops at the port of Marseille. Lady Bane throws Jim on a boat and then heads out into the open waters. Lady Bane tells Jim she visited the crime scene in Paris, the laboratory. The real one was beneath the building. And inside she found DNA samples of many notable costume heroes and their foes. Some of them had been taken, like Batman's. Lady Bane found a file left on a workstation with a little note on it. She found out how she was made and why. The leaders of Santa Prisca valued the symbol of Bane, but wanted one that they could control with more advanced conditioning. They made a deal with the men in this laboratory to build them a new one. Addicted to venom from birth, Lady Bane was never meant to question who she was or what she did. She would be unleashed on her target until she could be contained again. Lady Bane tells Jim how she wants to kill the Joker, which is gruesome. She wants to know why Jim wants to kill the Joker, even though he will not. She doesn't want to kill the Joker for her makers, but for Jim, and she wants to be free of her programming. Lady Bane explains Joker has kidnapped the chief scientist who made her to a private estate on the island of Morjoka.
This issue, I think, is pretty, does a pretty good job for me being representative of my feelings of the series as a whole so far, which is it's not a bad issue. It tells a pretty interesting story. I was interested in Lady Bane's kind of backstory and origin, but my main frustration with the book remains. They're not going to kill the Joker. And if they do, he's not going to stay dead for more than, you know, a handful of issues. And so I just don't, you know what I mean? Like, it just, all of this just feels like a waste of time.
I honestly don't have an argument for that. I myself am finding Lady Bane's story interesting also, but I have to agree with you. What's the purpose of the story? Because obviously, if they kill the Joker, he's not going to stay dead. That's a guarantee. I mean, he's too popular of a character. So
right, and I get it. And so I totally understand why you don't kill the Joker. Like you said, he's just far too popular, and I get that. So what are we doing? That's just sort of my problem. I just don't get, you know, you have this interesting character with Lady Bane. I really like the idea of her wanting to kill the Joker, but not wanting to do it for the reasons that she was created to, and wanting to, like, you know, they said, like, have a purpose, a different purpose that she chose. I like that, Drew. Like, all of that is interesting to me, but it just feels like it's all for naught. Like, we're just doing all of this stuff for ultimately what will just be, you know, Joker's going to walk away at the end of the story. I'm sure Jim Gordon will walk away a changed man for the 20th time. Just, I don't know.
I don't know either. And are they going to bring Batman into the story at some point?
Can't imagine that they won't. I mean, can you? I can't picture this story ending without Batman popping up.
Yeah, that was my point, because they kind of hinted at it at the beginning of the series, and I am expecting him to pop up. They've said this is supposed to be an ongoing, but I can't see it ongoing for very long.
Well, I think we know this is getting canceled when Tinian leaves, right?
Oh, yeah, you're right. I forgot all about that. You're right. It is getting canceled when Tinian leaves. I don't know how soon that is, but...
But the thing that is crazy to me, theoretically at least, the implication I got from that announcement was that it would have kept going had Tinian continued to work for DC, that the series would keep going, which is baffling to me. Because like you said, Drew, I just can't. How much longer can this story go on for?
Yeah, it's already starting to feel like it's stretched out already.
Yeah. And that's with multiple issues having absolutely nothing to do with the plot. They've already had like three filler issues.
Yeah, so it's probably a good thing it's getting canceled. Hopefully they've wrapped up the story. And it just doesn't just drop somewhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right. Of course, we had the punchline backup story in this. Orca finds Harper and Kelly in a secret room that Harley Quinn once used. Harper forms a plan of escape and asks Orca to create a distraction. Punchline somehow knows the plan and shows up with her army. Orca joins Harper and Kelly in their fight so they can escape. I was reading this. I was like... Of course Punchline already knows their plan. I'm like, come on, give me a break.
Of course she knows that. Of course she's able to get the jump on Orca at the end of the issue. It's just, I mean, she's the villain version of a Mary Sue. There's just no other way to describe her. It's why I don't like that character, because she just was just shoved in our face constantly that, oh my God, she's so great. You should like this character because, look, she's good at literally everything. And it's just, and I want to be clear, I wouldn't like that for any character. It's just, it's frustrating. Even the good Superman books, Superman is literally good at everything. Those ones find ways to humanize the guy, and they don't constantly, you know what I mean? Like, even something like All-Star Superman, which I think, in my opinion, is the best Superman book, is all about how amazing Superman is. Even that, you know, it doesn't feel like it's shoving it in your face, like, hey, you should like Superman, because look how good he is.
Exactly. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Titans United number 2. The Titans take down Kite Man before he blows up. Connor is hacked into the Bat Computer when he discovers Morton and Brown were both at Cranefield Penitentiary together, linked to Dr. Matthew Rosbeck of Cadmus. Dr. Rosbeck was conducting experiments using Titan DNA on inmates, making them sleeper agents to use in case the superheroes go bad. Before Dr. Rosbeck reveals any other sleeper agents, an assassin puts an arrow in Dr. Rosenbeck's chest. Superboy and Nightwing go after the assassin, but they ignite a bomb and get away. Testing the arrow that was in Dr. Rosenbeck's chest, Nightwing discovers the assassin was Lady Vic. Raven takes Red Hood and Donna to track down who paid Lady Vic to kill Dr. Rosenbeck. Starfire wants to run some tests on Connor, but he refuses. Instead, he flies to space and passes out. Superboy wakes up and finds he's bound to a table in front of Blackfire's throne.
I found this kind of all over the place, Drew. I don't know about you. Superboy was just fighting everybody. I don't know. There was a lot.
Yeah, there was quite a bit going on. Not really sure where they're going with this story. We're bringing Blackfire in too now, and
that was sort of my problem. It starts with the Kite Man fight, and I understand you don't want to center the entire issue around fighting Kite Man, okay? But then they transition to one of the guys that's behind what's going on with Kite Man, and then they just sort of leave it at that. It feels like that's maybe resolved, which felt empty. If I'm being honest, I'm assuming it's not resolved, but I don't know. And then they jump to Blackfire popping up. We were just all over the place.
Yeah. It feels kind of like they don't have a direction for this story. I know it's supposed to be a limited series. Well, I'm wondering what the point is of the story is.
It feels like I don't like comics when it feels like they exist just to, because there's a live action thing going on, so let's put a comic out. And that's kind of what it feels like to me. It just exists because of the Titans book.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, because they're tying it into the action series, but it's not the same. It's like, hey, we got a Titan story, let's put this comic out so people will buy it. That is what it feels like. And it still feels weird that Red Hood's on this team and is causing so much antagonistic things with Superboy.
None of the team seems to particularly like each other in this version, which is, I think, my biggest problem with it so far, is they're all... It feels very much like that Detective Comics early Rebirth run, where the entire Bat family seemed to just detest being on the same team together. It feels a lot like that, where you've got Red Hood just hates everyone, and Superboy seems to be ready to fight everyone. Remember that he probably ought to have killed Red Hood last issue. I'm still not over that.
No, and we saw him have temper problems again in this issue.
Yeah, so... I don't know. It is not a terrible comic by any means, but it's not really been doing it for me so far.
All right, let's move on to our next title for this week. Blue and Gold number 3. Omnizon comes to the United Nations building, stating Earth is part of her realm. Each and every one of you are my subjects, and she put a red gem on the ground and red energy shoots into the sky. Across town, Booster is live streaming move-in day. Only problem is they haven't paid their first month's rent. Michael calls Ted, who says he forgot about move-in day. Ted is sitting with his broken bug, cannibalizing parts, and looking defeated. Michael sees the energy boom and changes into Booster Gold. Skeets live streams as Omnizon takes some of the United Nations representatives hostage. Booster Gold and Omnizon fight until Blue Beetle shows up in a beetle buggy. The battle rages on as Blue Beetle then gets caught in a chokehold by Omnizon. Blue Beetle presses a button on his wrist and a Skeets-like object appears telling Omnizon to unhand Blue Beetle. Omnizon replies, not until he has drawn his last breath. The Skeets-like object, known as Buggles, fires a beam at Omnizon and Booster thinks she's been vaporized. Ted tells Michael he is broke. Trixie Collins shows up and Skeets claims she's the best assistant Booster ever had. Trixie states she owns a building with space and it's theirs if they want. Ted and Michael figure out they can crowdsource to get the rent they need. Ted tells Booster he didn't kill Omnizon. Buggles is equipped with a teleportation beam, technology that was borrowed from the Justice League. Omnizon won't be bugging them for quite a while because Ted transported her to a dank, hot, bug-infested Louisiana swamp.
Drew, I continue to feel so conflicted about this book because obviously I love the fact that there's a Booster Gold and Blue Beetle book going on right now. I get why you get Dan Jurgens writing it. He's the one who created Booster Gold. And I appreciate what he's trying to do with the sort of live chat feed that's going through every issue, but it's just so distracting. And again, I cannot emphasize enough that it's being written by a dude that's not exactly of the generation that is doing live video feeds.
I gotta tell you, Cletus, this issue, when I read it, I was kind of ignoring that stuff because, yeah, I have to tell you, it is distracting. So when I was reading through, I just ignored it and stuck to the story part, and I liked the issue a lot better.
I get the thing that is tough, Drew, is I think it's a good idea. It makes sense. Like, Booster Gold right now in 2021 absolutely would be a live streamer, and those sort of things would be, those sort of comments and stuff would be scrolling through. I get that. And it is a good idea. It's not been, in my opinion, as well executed as it could be. I feel like it hasn't served a huge purpose yet. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like there are ways that you could incorporate that better into the story to help tell your story in some way, and they're really just kind of there.
Yeah, I agree. So I imagine there is a better way to do it. And I too find it distracting as I'm reading through, which is why I kind of ignored it this issue and just read the story. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week. I am Batman number 2. Batman hunts down the owner of the building that blew up last issue with 6 bodies inside. The owner states he knows nothing about that. Batman leaves him for the police because he has illegal guns. Detective Chubbs and Whitaker talk to an underage kid about killing anarchy. Morris tells the detectives he was on patrol as a member of the Morality Authority, a group that has sworn to defend the city from the agents of the Hidden Agenda. And the Hidden Agenda is a shadow government that includes masks, the magistrate, and even the police. Seer told him that special people protect Gotham, and he is special. We see Jace is talking to Vol, and Arkadine kidnaps and kills some anarchists. He sets them up as investigators of an anti-police riot. Seer escalates the violence between citizens, masks, and the police. We learn from Vol that Arkadine's been arrested and is being extradited from Vietnam. Jace decides he's going after Seer because he knows the rest of the Bat family is going after Scarecrow. the moral authority is Sears' army made of loose affiliation of different armed groups. The young shooter was a member of one of them. Vol states that Sear is a digital ghost. He can't even begin to find a way into Sear's system. Jace tells Vol to leave a message from the moral authority to meet with Sear. Renee Montoya asks Tanya Fox to represent Morris, the kid who killed Anarchy. Renee wants to know how it is right for this kid to spend the rest of his life in jail while the people who used and manipulated him are walking free. When the moral authority shows up to meet Sear, they instead meet Batman. When Batman grabs one of the perps, Batman pulls off his mouth covering to reveal he's not the original. He doesn't have a no-kill rule. The issue ends with Sear telling his moral authority that Morris needs protected and Batman must be dealt with. One of my main problems with this comic, Cletus, is last issue told us this was 6 years in the future. But when I was reading this issue, it didn't feel like it was 6 years in the future. So it's sending out a confused message, I think. At least to me it is.
That's fair, Drew. I truly do not have a good grasp of what the timeline of this is supposed to be. I've kind of like you with the Booster Gold issue, I've kind of just been ignoring it and just reading the story. because you're right, it's done such a terrible job of being clear exactly, like, I'm assuming this is not in the same continuity technically as what's going on in the rest of the Batman books right now. But I don't know. I really don't know. And so I've just been reading the story for what it is.
They're introducing this character named Sear, and I'm pretty sure we got introduced to him in one of the other Bat books, but I can't remember it offhand right now.
I don't remember if we have seen Sear before this, probably, but we for sure get it in one of the Urban Legend stories this week.
That's probably where I saw it then. I knew I'd seen it more than once. Right now, I don't have a judgment on I Am Batman yet, whether I'm liking it or disliking it. It's just a little too confusing yet, and I don't think Jace has found his groove as Batman yet, so I'm going to have to read more to see how well I like it. And, of course, you know, he's a new character, so it might take a while to get used to him, too.
I agree. One thing I did like in this was, obviously, him. Very easy to reveal that he's not the Batman that most people know by pulling the lower part of his mask off. That was a nice touch. The other thing that is interesting with that is, from everything we've seen, Drew, he seems to operate on relatively the same code as Batman of not killing, but they don't know that yet. And that was an interesting touch, this issue, was him kind of playing on that idea. As far as I can tell, he's very much in line with what Batman does, but again, he doesn't need to tell them that, and he's done a great job of withholding that information.
Agreed. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week. Justice League Last Ride number 6. Batman figures out that Hal Jordan is really Darkseid, an Owen-powered Darkseid. It's all been a trap. Darkseid lured the Justice League to Apokolips to witness its rebirth and then kill them. Batman confronts Lobo, asking him if bringing the Justice League to Apokolips was his job he was hired for. Lobo states his client had a real specific idea on how to do it, not his usual hack and slash job. Batman hires Lobo to take out the Horde, no killing, and if they win, 2 million Thanagarian credits are his. Superman and Wonder Woman go after Darkseid. The rest deal with the crew after Lobo. At the end of the issue, Martian Manhunter shows up.
Getting pretty bonkers, Drew. Getting pretty bonkers. I don't know. That's the best way I can put it. We really ramped it up.
Yeah. I like the twist that it was Darkseid behind it. I wasn't expecting him to be Hal Jordan, that's for sure. or controlling him.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Drew. I don't really remember them hinting at that either. So that felt like it wasn't like they telegraphed that reveal, at least not that I remember.
No, I think the only thing we saw with Hal and Darkseid is they were fighting each other on Oa when Darkseid blew up the battery or grabbed all the energy or whatever the heck it was he did. So, yeah, there was no hint of it that I remember.
Very effective reveal. Very interesting to have Darkseid be powered up by, you know, the central power battery. It seemed to me, Drew, I don't know if you got this, it seemed like Martian Manhunter was made out of Green Lantern energy.
Yeah, there was something weird about him that I couldn't figure it out, but now that you mention it, maybe he was. I wonder if we'll get some sort of reveal next issue on that.
I'm assuming so. His appearance was, this was sort of the interesting comparison. Obviously, the book has done quite a bit to hint that Martian Manhunter was still alive or active somehow. And so him popping back up was cool, but not surprising. The Darkseid one, I thought, came out of nowhere, which was cool, which made it cool because it was like, oh, that's awesome.
The only thing weird about the series so far is Amazo has not popped back up yet. Because they focused on him at the beginning of the series, but what happened with him or what weird thing was going on with him at the beginning that he hasn't popped back up yet? Did you even forget he was in it?
Yeah.
So I'm just curious what was going on with him, and maybe he'll pop back up, and if he doesn't, that's just weird. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Superman and the Authority number 4. Fort Superman, the Bottle City of Kandor. Ultra Humanite has Superman captured, where he plans to slice off the top of his head, dig out his brains, and toss them in the trash. When that is done, Ultra Humanite will proceed to transplant a copy of his brain into Superman's skull. Superman opens his eyes and tells Ultra Humanite that the Kryptonian environment is offline. Superman has his full strength. Lois hits Ultra Humanite with a K-Laser 5. After examining Ultra Humanite's head, Superman discovers he's been working with Brainiac. Dubai, the G7 Climate Change Summit. Midnighter and Natasha Irons are battling Iron Cross, an indestructible white supremacist. Civ, an alien, Fleur de Lis, a tech-enhanced French super spy, and Cold Cast, former elite member. Master of the First Force. In West Hollywood, Apollo and Enchantress are searching for Leah Nelson. Eclipso has kidnapped her and is trying to help her commit suicide. Apollo and Enchantress are able to save her. Superman tells his team that they are going to War World. Follow Superman and the Authority as they embark on the fight to free War World, beginning in Action Comics 1036. Then the issue ends with Superman telling Manchester Black he came into possession of a fragment of something called the Wall. It's an artifact of the New Gods. In times of cosmic upheaval, the so-called Unifriend, a mysterious hand of fire, is said to spell out communications directly from the source of creation. For the last 11 days, it's been writing the same thing over and over. Light Ray is. To be continued.
I found this issue to be interesting, and I continued, or I should say, did enjoy this series, Drew, but I maintain that they are not on the same page as the rest of the Superman book, and it's really weird to me that there's this level of miscommunication going on.
I agree, and yeah, we kind of talked about this last time, and I agree with you. It doesn't seem to be on the same page. Obviously, you're going to be following the story in Action Comics. We also know there's supposed to be another Superman and Batman Authority or something like that. I don't know, Batman's supposed to be entering into this, and that just feels weird to me. Because they're supposed to be off-planet somewhere. Why is Batman getting involved with this team? Other than to raise comic book dollars.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Well, on two levels. One, it doesn't make sense because from the Superman side of this story, this is being pitched as him going away for a long time. Why would Batman be on that mission? That doesn't make sense. And then two, they've got Midnighter, who's obviously a much more violent Batman, but he's basically Batman. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't get it either. And I guess we'll just have to see how it plays out. Because obviously they're following the story in Action Comics, but if they're doing this other title too, why are we doing two different titles for this story? I don't know. I just don't know. I don't understand why we're including Batman, except for maybe, you know, Batman brings in money. Let's put him on the team.
That's what it seems like. It seems like it's being a decision being made by executives in an office and not the actual creative teams is what it feels like to me, Drew.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week. Strange Adventures number 12. In the past, Adam Strange receives a medal for bravery in the face of certain defeat on Ran. In the present, Mr. Terrific and Atlanta are cleared to board a pick ship. When Atlanta's daughter is not there to meet them because of something bureaucratic, Atlanta shoots one of the guards. On Ran, Adam and Atlanta are fighting some sort of sand monster. They are trying to stop him before he gets to the city. They use their lasers to heat the sand to 3,090 degrees, thus turning him into glass and shattering him. Once again, Ran is saved. We see in the present that Atlanta is finally reunited with her mother and they hug. Because Mr. Terrific was the one that found her, Aaliyah gives him a hug as well. Back on Ran, Adam and Atlanta talk about moving to Earth. Adam states he has given everything he can to Ran. It's time for him to go home. On Earth, Atlanta tells Michael she's going back to Ran to prepare for the Pick's revenge. Aaliyah is going to stay on Earth. It's the only safe place for her. Atlanta will spend as much time as possible with her going back and forth. She'll be the woman of two worlds. Atlanta informs Michael he will be taking care of Aaliyah. She's not asking. Michael's the one who beat the Picks, and therefore he's the one man that can care for her. If Michael hadn't interfered, Aaliyah would be living a happy, peaceful life with both her parents. Instead, she will be alone on a foreign planet while her mother prepares her homeland to be decimated by terror. Michael ruined Aaliyah's life, and it's the least he can do. Back on Ran, Adam asks Atlanta to come to bed. She refuses, stating she has to finish Adam's stupid memoir. On Earth, Michael is lifting weights while Aaliyah is quizzing his knowledge. And the issue ends on Earth with Adam Strange going to his first book signing, which kind of bookends the series because we started out with him at his book signing.
What a great series, Drew. What a great series. Obviously, the emotional climax of the story is, you know, the past issue. But I thought this really brought the story to a really great close. A couple things that I wanted to highlight that I really liked. One of the things throughout the story that I spoke a number of times about how much I enjoyed was the switching between the two art styles, depending on which timeline we were in. And obviously, and one thing I really liked is, so at the beginning of the book, Doc Shaner's past artwork was super clean. We were getting like the ideal, adventurous, perfect, so to speak, version of Adam Strange. And then just obviously, as the story continues, it's still Doc Shaner's artwork, but that story gets rougher and rougher and rougher as we're seeing just like the brutality of what that war actually was. And then this issue, they swing it back to it really just made it so bittersweet. It swings back to that kind of ideal life. You know what Adam is actually up to at that point, but it's still, you can see they don't, you know, Elena doesn't realize it yet. And so they're living that theoretically happy life, that perfect life. And you know at the end of the story that that's all literally about to come crashing down. The other thing that I really liked, Drew, and this story as a whole was so much about the gray area, right, of morality, where things aren't always going to be black and white, good and evil. At what point is it okay to do, X, Y, or Z? And one thing I just found
that I really liked in this last issue was Alana's point about essentially forcing Mr. Terrific to raise her daughter, which was that, in her opinion, he ruined her daughter's life. And she's not, if you think about it, Drew, she's not entirely wrong, right? If Mr. Terrific does nothing, he will. Adam Strange does get his daughter back, right? His wife never learns the terrible secret behind that. Obviously, Earth is destroyed, but the two of them probably go back to their home planet and live a happy life, right? Mr. Terrific does objectively the correct thing. I don't think anybody can disagree. He absolutely does the right thing, but there are still consequences even to doing the right thing. This little girl loses her dad. Her home planet is probably going to get decimated by a revenge attack by the Picks. It was just, all of that was just so fascinating to me.
Yeah, it was fascinating. And I think it would be interesting because we now have the United, well, this is a different storyline or timeline too. I don't know. I think it'd be, we know that Ran is part of the United Planets. It'd be interesting when the Picks came back, if the United Planets came in and, you know, it'd be interesting to see what happened from there, if they could actually stop them. But you're right, it's a tragic ending for the Ran part of the story. Earth gets saved, but Ran loses in the end, even though Adam Strange had saved them and doomed Earth. And like you said, the consequences of that is that Michael gets stuck raising Aaliyah, basically. Very interesting story, very good.
Yeah, this was phenomenal, Drew. And again, like I said, this was just such a good ending because, you know, it doesn't put a nice bow on it because it's not the type of story that gets a nice bow on it. Mr. Terrific absolutely does the right thing. He smells a rat. He figures out what actually happened. He saves Earth. All of that is good. There is absolutely nothing wrong with any part of that process. But like we see in this story, even good things can have some negative consequences. And I felt like that message was true to the story that we saw.
Agreed. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Batman Urban Legends number 8. Our first story is Batwoman and Disinformation Campaigning, part 1 of 2. Kate Kane is living with her sister Beth, who was formerly known as Red Alice. Beth has been going to therapy but is struggling with her dual identity. Renee Montoya shows up at Kate's apartment. A video has gone viral of Batgirl murdering civilians in broad daylight. The whole city is out for blood. They want justice. Renee wants answers. Kate states she will look into it. Batwoman finds Cassandra battling against the magistrate. Cassandra confirms the video is a fake. They decide to track down Oracle to help them. Then Seer appears electronically and tells the women that Seer knows everything about them, including their secret identities. Seer tells Kate she better get home because she has a president and shows a picture of Beth looking all crazy. When Kate gets home to Beth, Beth is holding a knife and is surrounded by unconscious magistrate soldiers. Beth states she almost killed them. Beth states that Red Alice can command people that can come help them. Now, I don't know about you, Cletus, but first of all, we were thrown into this world with Batwoman and her sister Beth living together, and I'm like, when did this happen? I don't remember her ever being called Red Alice, and here we are again with another seemingly overpowered villain, this Seer character, which I don't even think is human. I think it's an AI. And I'm wondering, how can we overcome these odds?
If I'm being honest with you, Drew, you sound far more invested in the story than I was. those are all extremely valid questions. I don't have answers to them because, if I'm being honest, I did not care enough as I was reading the story to think that deeply about it.
Well, I kind of had to because I had to summarize it.
I will say the art style of this was very good. I very much enjoyed the art of the book. The writing was fine. Like you said, it's throwing in a different status quo that, again, assuredly is because of the TV show. which is fine, but I don't know. We just haven't seen a lot of Batwoman in any regards recently for the most part, so I don't even know necessarily that it is a sudden change to the status quo, Drew, because arguably we've not really seen her much.
No, we haven't, and I'm looking at this and looking at the Superman and Superman Authority with Batman coming into it. I wonder if there's a big push from executive to make some of these comics like the shows.
Has to be.
So it just feels like that anyways. All right, our second story is called Professor Pig and Little Pig, Little Pig. Alfred reads a story about the Big Bad Wolf and the Three Little Pigs. In the present, we see Batman tracking down Professor Pig after he's abducted a little girl. Batman represents the wolf. In the story, the wolf loses when he comes down the chimney into a pot of boiling water and is eaten for dinner. Bruce states, if he was the wolf, he would have been better prepared. And we see that Batman has an armored vehicle that crashes through Professor Pig's impenetrable fortress. And Batman rescues the girl.
I liked turning this into sort of Batman version of the Three Little Pigs, Drew. I did find the ending of the story a little bit silly, as if Bruce Wayne is the only person that it would occur to that climbing down the chimney was a bad idea for the wolf to do. Only Batman is capable of such genius.
I like this one too because of the parallels to the story. So it was kind of interesting. All right, we had another story in this called, it was Azrael in Dark Knight of the Soul, Part 1 of 3. Azrael tracks down a guy named Bullet Tooth. Bullet Tooth blows up the building and kills himself. Jean Paul Valley is working at the St. Rita Hospice inpatient unit. When he comes back to his apartment, Batman is waiting there with questions, such as, where has he been? Jean Paul Valley answers, outer space. And the editors remind us this was in the Justice League Odyssey series. Batman tells John Paul that there was a body count at Bullet Tooth's operation. Batman reminds Azrael he doesn't allow body counts. John Paul tells Batman that Bullet Tooth blew up his own building. Batman is also curious about the drug dealer found six blocks from Jean Paul's apartment that was decapitated by a battle axe. Jean Paul states that it wasn't him. He doesn't use a battle axe, just a flaming sword. Jean Paul tells Batman he's following the true way by serving his fellow man. Bullet Tooth is somehow resurrected. Azrael hears trumpets and is waiting for the horsemen of the apocalypse to come forth. He prays to let the avenging angel Azrael serve as the hand to bring about the world to come. And then there's an editor's note that states the story takes place after Arkham City number 1. Got to tell you, Cletus, I was not very interested in this story.
I was very interested in your recap, Drew, because if I'm being completely honest with you, I was about like two panels in and my eyes just kind of glazed over a little bit. And I was just like, yeah, I'm not going to read this.
I don't blame you either.
As soon as I saw the Bullet Tooth guy, I was like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. I'm done. I'm sure that's not even a new character. I just was like, I already was not feeling the story, and that was enough for me. That was good.
Well, all right. Well, let's go into the last story, which I wasn't that into either. We have the Outsiders in the Fearful Part 1 of 2. Future State plus 30 years Gotham City. Duke Thomas has the Soul Taker, and Black Lightning is trapped inside. Duke Thomas casts a spell that sends Jefferson Pierce back in time to prevent the tragedy that began 30 years ago. Black Lightning must kill a guy named Jonah Winfield, who gets gassed by Scarecrow two different times and has become fear himself. Jonah secretes fear toxin out of his pores like pheromones that make you want to tear out. You want to tear your own heart out. Jonah is known as the Fearful. The Outsiders track down Jonah, but the Signal becomes infected with the pheromones. The Signal thinks Jonah is the Joker. Red Robin shows up and tells Duke not to worry about it. He's got it. And that's probably the only thing I found interesting about the story was Red Robin.
I was confused as heck by the Joker popping up at the end because I had thought it was supposed to be this guy, this other guy, and then it was Joker, and I was like, well, I don't, what? I was already pretty checked out, again, if I'm being honest. I was not super invested, and I was just like, what's happening right now?
Yeah, it was very confusing. It was a lot of stuff we had to pick up. What had happened in the past. It was weird. I mean, it's kind of cool that they go back in time when we see the different things that happen in time going back in time. But it was very confusing.
I think the biggest problem that the story had, Drew, is that it was trying to tell a story that would take at minimum at least a full issue to tell and was trying to do it in like 5 pages.
Agreed. Because there was a lot of story crammed into a small amount of time. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Wonder Woman number 780. Wonder Woman returns to the Hall of Justice and scares the hell out of Martian Manhunter, who is apparently eating cookies. Next, Wonder Woman is welcomed back by Superman with a hug and Batman with a handshake. Black Canary gives Wonder Woman a running jump hug, and Wonder Woman greets the rest of the Justice League, including Black Adam and Cyborg. Dr. Fate came as soon as Diana was back. Justice League Dark needs her help because there is something terribly wrong with Atlantis. Diana's mother intervenes because she wants to talk to her daughter. Diana decides to go home to Themyscira before meeting up with Dr. Fate. On the way home, Diana stops to rescue a boat full of people. The rescue is captured on video and blasted out on social media. The world knows Wonder Woman has returned, including Steve Trevor, Cassie, Donna Troy, Eda Candy, the Holiday Clubhouse, and Dr. Psycho. When Lady Artemis hears of Wonder Woman's return, she must speak with Queen Faruka at once. Wonder Woman and Queen Nubia talk alone when Wonder Woman returns. Nubia returns the lasso of truth to Diana. The two women hold hands while Diana wraps the lasso around them. Diana makes a pledge to truth while Nubia makes a pledge to understanding. Wonder Woman takes a moment alone on the edge of a cliff before flying off into the sky, past a rainbow, wondering what her new role will be.
Drew, I really liked this issue. I thought it was a great way to kind of celebrate the return of Wonder Woman, and you get the just joyful reaction of various people in the DC universe. That was really good and really well done. I think the issue might have landed a little bit better emotionally. I think I would have felt the same thing as these characters. If we've gotten Wonder Woman's in so many other books right now, it doesn't really feel like she's actually been gone.
I'm trying to think, what other books is she in?
We've got I know it's not a continuity one. We've got her in the Justice League story.
Oh, the Justice League last ride?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have her in that.
She's in that. Obviously, she's in the one that's based on the animated Justice League. And again, I know these aren't continuity stories. I understand that. And we've had Wonder Woman Black and Gold. But and obviously her own book, in which she's obviously been the main character, but not in the main DC world. I haven't felt her absence the way that these characters have. It was one of those things, like, I got it that she legitimately hadn't been around them, but she's not been absent from us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. To us, it doesn't feel like she's been gone. I understand that. Especially when we've had such good stories with her in the afterlife, too.
And I don't mean that to necessarily disparage the comic. I just felt like it could have had an even bigger impact had we not been exposed to Wonder Woman in so many other stories during the time that this was coming out. Now, am I arguing that they should have done that? No. No. I like that we got the Wonder Woman stories that we did. But I do think it would have landed a little bit better. The other thing, and the only minor nitpick that I had with this issue, because overall I thought it was very great, was them just sort of brushing off the urgent need that Dr. Fate had for her. I don't feel like he pops around and is like, hey guys, can somebody drive me to pick up some McDonald's? Like, he's like, there's an urgent need in Atlantis. We need you there right now. I'm like, ah, we can wait.
I agree with you on that, because Wonder Woman wouldn't have shrugged off the need. She would have been there. So that did kind of feel weird. But I understand why they didn't pull her into the story right away. I don't know if we're gonna see her in Justice League Dark pop up. I don't think so. But they may. I don't know.
Yeah, I almost wonder, Drew, if that was thrown in there as a way to explain why she's not there. It was not really a question that I had, if I'm being honest, but that's sort of what it felt like.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's probably why it was in there, to explain why she wasn't there. But they could have left it out, and I don't think it would have been a big deal, because she's been gone, so... All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our DC television shows.
Tired of the same old movie podcasts?
Yeah.
What if I told you there's a podcast that gabs about good and bad movies?
Why are you spreading such lies?
It's true, you rascal. Every week, Double Edge Double Bill mixes that scrumptious taste of good movies with the sour flavor of a bad one.
That sounds tasty.
Well, don't delay. Stuff it down your ear throats today. Double Edge Double Bill is part of the Balance ESO Network Breakfast. It can be found wherever you download podcasts.
And we're back. Let's talk Supergirl, Season 6, Episode 14, Magical Thinking. William is going to be hanging out in the tower reporting on the Super Friends. Nixley has located the second totem in National City. It's at the Mixed Martial Arts Festival. One of the fighters has been carrying it around in his pocket as a good luck charm. He hands it over to Nixley. Supergirl shows up, and Nixley releases the gauntlet's energy, and the fighters start brawling, affected by its energy. Angela does not like the story William is writing. She tells William to come back with the real story, or don't come back at all. Nixley is able to locate the third totem. The little alien girl Kelly has been working with has powers. Lena uses magic to try and track Nixley, but all she does is make things worse by making the gardener more violent. The Super Friends decide to use Lena's magic to overwhelm Nixley with compassion. Nixley can't handle all that compassion and gives it back to the humans. She then tosses the totem away. Supergirl grabs the totem as it falls from the sky. William tells Andrea that he is going to write the story his way, otherwise he'll take it to the Daily Planet. Alex and Kelly decide to take in the little alien girl when her new foster parents decide she is not a fit for their family.
The adoption thing was not a surprise to me, Drew, because we know that had been a big thing for Alex a couple seasons ago. So I was not surprised when the episode ended with them sort of looking at each other and be like, hey, we're going to adopt this girl. I do... Again, you know, we didn't have to do it this way, but I do feel like it was very in line with what the show does, that they couldn't resist making somebody else look bad in order to make Alex and Guardian look good in adopting the girl. Like, why couldn't they just have adopted the girl? We had already seen the connection between her and Guardian a couple episodes ago. It was nice. There was, like, have her just, like, you know, she's in foster care, and like, hey, you know what? There's this girl we really liked. I know that we've talked about wanting to adopt a girl. Let's do it. What would have been wrong with that, Drew? No, no, no. It's got to be, once again, this bizarre thing with this show that literally everybody involved in the foster care and adoption programs are evil people unless they are Alex. I just don't get it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I was happy to see them adopt the little alien girl. I was excited about that. Especially since they've been hitting at Alex wanting to have a child of her own. So they've been hitting at that for several seasons. So I was happy to see that. with the rest of the show, I don't know. I don't know. Does it feel like this Totem story is starting to drag on?
I mean, yeah. It just seems so silly to me. And it's one of those things, I think it exists, Drew, because they've got to fill episodes. I think it's the fatal flaw of a lot of these CW shows is that the seasons are so dang long and these writers cannot come up with a good 22-episode version of a story. And so they come up with something like this where they're basically chasing after the Infinity Stones.
Yeah, that's basically what they're doing, isn't it? All right, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Stargirl, Season 2, Episode 9, Summer School, Chapter 9. Decades ago, Bruce Gordon has had enough of Eclipso, destroying his friends and family. Bruce is about to take his own life when Eclipso talks him into getting his ex-wife back by taking out her new husband. All Bruce has to do is drop the gun and give Eclipso control of his body. A storm is brewing in Blue Valley because of Eclipso. Courtney tells Pat that she and Beth are going after Eclipso, and Courtney leaves before Pat can object. In the past, there is a funeral for Rebecca McNider. Jay Garrick shows up and tells the JSA about Eclipso. In the present, Pat sees a casket in the living room and a voice echoing in the house calling him a liar. In the past, Pat learns from Sylvester that Eclipso is a spiritual parasite and an otherworldly creature. It has possessed Bruce Gordon, the person that found it on the island. It can make you see anything at once. It can make your nightmares come true. The Shade told Sylvester how they can stop Eclipso, and the only way to stop Eclipso is by killing the host. Once the host is dead, Eclipso will be forced back into the diamond. As long as no one touches the diamond, Eclipso will be powerless inside. Barbara's car stops working and the door is locked. Jordan McKent, Icicle, appears in the back seat. The Shade tells Barbara to ignore Icicle and start the car, and the illusion fades. Cameron McKent drops by the Dugan house and has a chat with Mike after the death of his father. Cameron states, "You killed my dad, so I get to kill your dad." Courtney finds Mike on the floor like he's being choked. Courtney puts Mike's hand on the staff and the illusion fades. In the past, Starman, Wildcat, Hourman, and the Flash need Pat because of a tie vote. Should they kill the host? Eclipso has beat Green Lantern, the Spectre, Dr. Fate, and the Hawks. Flash and Pat vote not to kill the host. Wildcat, Hourman, and Starman vote yes to kill the host. In the present, Pat thinks he's being shot at by Bruce Gordon. Courtney uses the staff once again to break the illusion. Pat tells Courtney how the JSA defeated Eclipso by killing Bruce Gordon. Courtney is mad at Pat and her mom for lying to her. And we see that little boy Eclipso is laughing outside the window.
This is another great episode. I love the way that we just see Eclipso just mentally picking off these characters one at a time. Beth is really the only one that's managed to not succumb to whatever he's trying to do to break them. It was fascinating. We knew this was coming. Something like this was coming because we knew that Pat had been hiding what had really happened with Eclipso in the past. And not surprisingly, we see this. I felt, Drew, I don't know about you, it felt like they were retconning a little bit and explaining that this was the thing that really broke the JSA up. And kind of explaining why they got defeated so thoroughly by an Injustice Society that didn't really seem, if I'm being honest, strong enough to be able to take them down.
Yeah, I agree with you. It did feel like a retcon. Because when we saw Season 1, it was, like you said, it was the Injustice Society that took them down. And here they are saying it was because they killed. That's why they got broke up.
They broken up and then they got back together briefly and they were not prepared, essentially, to fight the JSA. It worked. To me, it didn't feel like such a drastic swing in logic that it didn't make sense. Like, I got what they were doing, but I did feel like I was getting a retcon out of that. I still think, Drew, I'm still highly of the opinion that something else happened with Dr. Midnighter. There's a reason he's in the Shadow Realm, and I'm very curious what it is. I don't think it's good.
I agree with you, and I'm curious about that myself. So I'm curious to find out that what that is. I mean, in this episode we saw that his daughter was killed, so I'm sure they're going to reveal more of what's going on behind the scenes with that in a future episode. Oh, and it's also great to see John Wesley Shipp reprise his role as Jay Garrick in this, even if it was only briefly.
It was awesome. It was awesome.
All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Titans, Season 3, Episode 6, Lady Vic. Lady Vic is at a diner near Gotham. The only other people in the diner are two cops who are in love, holding hands and talking about going on vacation. When the cops go to leave, their patrol car won't start. When the male cop checks under the hood, he finds a wire has been cut. A knife is thrown into his back. A woman cop gets out and draws her pistol. Lady Vic tosses another knife into her hand. Then Lady Vic kills the cop. Gotham City, 6 years ago. Dick Grayson is Robin. He catches a female thief trying to steal a vase from the Gotham Museum. It's Barbara Gordon. She's trying to keep her dad on his feet because the security there sucks. Dick and Barbara go for a drink, and Barbara is tired of being the perfect daughter to Jim Gordon. So her and Dick go on some museum heists. I gotta say, Cletus, this felt so weird.
It felt to me like they really wanted to do a Catwoman story, but for some reason aren't allowed to do Catwoman. And so they made Batgirl into Catwoman instead. It was weird.
Very weird. Dick goes back to Barbara's place where she is wearing the jewelry. The two start making out until Barbara accidentally wounds Dick with the jewelry. Dick wakes up in the present, all bloody from the gunshot wound he received last episode. Starfire and Beast Boy are not happy that Dick went out on his own and got shot. Jason tells Scarecrow that nothing is done unless he approves it. Crane takes Jason to the Thomas and Wayne Memorial Hospital. The surgical team is killed by Lady Vic, who Crane has hired. Crane lets Jason know he is expendable, and then a piece of medical tech is stolen. Bruce calls Barbara and tells her to meet him where it all started. 6 years ago, Dick and Barbara are trying to steal a jewel when Lady Vic and a companion show up and start fighting them. Lady Vic slices Barbara in the leg. Lady Vic throws a knife at Dick, and Barbara knocks her, and she kills her partner instead. In the present, Barbara shows up in Crime Alley and discovers it's a trap. Lady Vic is waiting there for her. The two fight until finally Barbara is able to get a gun on her. Lady Vic uses a magnesium flare to get away. Jason gives the no fear gas to a goon who goes and shoots up the restaurant that Tim Drake's family owns.
Obviously, we see this episode end with Jason, you know, doing more, at best, morally questionable things. But I will say, nonetheless, it did feel like it was also the first step towards redemption, if I'm being honest. I know it was him doing something bad, but it also felt like it was one step away from the Scarecrow.
The main problem I had with this episode is, like you said earlier, Barbara acting like the Catwoman. It's just very weird and did not seem like her character at all. And I don't know, I just had an issue with that. It just rubbed me the wrong way. And Dick, come on, he's supposed to be Robin. He shouldn't be going around robbing museums.
It's right in the name there.
Oh, okay. I thought that felt weird too. It seemed to go against him being Robin. So I just found that all weird.
I really do think they wanted to do Catwoman for some reason. And maybe they're also not allowed to do Batgirl. Drew, the DC stuff just drives me freaking bonkers because I cannot rule out that they're legitimately, for some reason, not allowed to have Batgirl and not allowed to do Catwoman. It's possible that's not true, but it's pretty in line, right?
Yeah, it definitely feels like it. So, yeah, it just feels odd that sometimes you're seeing multiple characters and different stories, and then there's some that are apparently off limits. It's just weird.
I just don't. It's just so stupid. Why? Why would you put stuff off? I don't know for sure that that's the case, but it feels that way. Why would you make Barbara into a Catwoman-like character instead of just having her be Batgirl? Why? That just doesn't make sense. Unless you're not allowed to do Batgirl. They don't really do Batman. I mean, they sort of have a couple times, but not really. It's really just Bruce. And then, again, it's just... Why? I just don't understand it.
Yeah. And then the other thing that that's felt weird with the show was we've had Bruce, but we have not had him in his bat outfit at all. They've gone to great lengths to go around that. The other thing I thought was strange with this episode was Lady Vic, you know, she's supposed to be an assassin for hire. What was the deal with killing the cops at the beginning of the episode? It's like the only reason they did it was to show how bad she was. But, you know, just killing random cops for no reason.
She saw this young, happy couple, and she was reminded of when she was in a young, happy relationship before she shot her husband/fiancé. I thought they made it pretty clear that she killed them specifically because she saw that these was a young couple in love, and she didn't like that. And we learn later why. When we see in the past that she accidentally shoots her fiance or husband.
Oh, okay. Now I get it. I guess it didn't click earlier. Okay, I guess that does make sense. You know, even with the few problems we've had with this issue, this the storyline this season's still been really good. And definitely looking forward to seeing more episodes. All right, well, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Why the Last Man, Season 1, Episode 4, Karen and Benji. Agent 355 and York are gathering up helicopter parts. Hero and Sammy find a house to squat in for the night. They find a car in the garage that works, but during the night, Hero goes out to the barn and makes sure the car will not start for Sammy in the morning. Hero and Sammy try to find supplies at a department store, but it's already been ransacked. Instead, Hero finds a little girl with a wounded leg and her mother. Hero cleans out the wound and offers to take them to the house they found. Agent 355 is about to shoot a rabbit when she hears some women ruffling through their stuff. Agent 355 confronts them, but York scares them away with a stick. Agent 355 is not happy with York taking risks. At the marketplace, Agent 355 trades a generator for a motorcycle. York chases after a woman he thinks is Beth. York gets caught by the women protecting the marketplace. Agent 355 comes to the rescue. Agent 355 and York escape on a motorcycle. A group of women come to the house where Hero is staying. They plan on shooting them until Nora speaks up and states Hero is a doctor that can save their friend that is shot. Hero does the best she can, but the woman needs a surgeon. The woman comes in and shoots the wounded woman. And then she chastises the group for not being hospitable to those who have come to help them. Nora tells Hero not to tell them who your mother is. I used to work at the White House.
One thing I'm fascinated by, Drew, in the story so far is obviously we see the president very successful, right? Very good at her job, has created this very successful life for herself. Her marriage has completely had before the disaster completely fallen apart. Her two kids are both total screw ups. It's just I love the juxtaposition between that, like the woman who has like everything together and then the rest of her life is just not.
So true. Oh man. I think the show is doing a pretty good job of showing that York doesn't like to listen to anybody. Agent 355 just wants to keep him safe. York wants to do his own thing.
And not really understanding fully the consequences of all of that. One thing I did like in this episode when the two of them are going back and forth at each other a little bit is him finally kind of saying that one of the things he doesn't like is that some of these people are dead because of him. And that would weigh on a person. I like that we're kind of seeing obviously he's not dealing with that well, but I do like that the show is kind of showing how that's affecting him.
Yeah. The other thing we're seeing is Agent 355, she's freaking ruthless. Because we know from last episode, she was behind the helicopter pilot women being killed. And she'll do anything to complete her mission, as we see. Especially when we see that York thinks he sees Beth, runs off, gets himself in trouble once again, and Agent 355 is there to save him. Because York's not the type of guy who can really save himself. He's not a tough guy, that's for sure. I'd also find it interesting that we're starting to see characters cross paths, like Hero and the woman who used to work for the president and her daughter coming across each other. And I don't think we've seen the last of this group of women needed the doctor.
No, it feels to me like they're going to be with that group for at least an episode or two, is what it feels like. Obviously, we'll find out for sure, but that seemed like they were going to be stuck on that stop for at least a bit.
I agree. And I'm really enjoying the show. I'm so frustrated it's been canceled, but it's not dead yet. Well, at least they haven't said it's dead yet.
Obviously, we won't know for a while, but I really believe that it's going to get picked up by HBO Max. I'd just be very surprised if this show doesn't get picked up, Drew.
I hope so. I really hope so. I like it. So, of course, I really like the graphic novel, too. So, all right. Well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have a shout-out, Cletus?
Yeah, so in the Booster and Blue Beetle comic, we see Teresa/Trixie Collins pops up. And for readers who are not familiar, obviously the comic hints that goes way back with Booster. And indeed, she goes all the way back to Booster Gold #1. So she's been there from the very beginning. She has a couple times very briefly donned the Gold Star superhero persona. And helped Booster out as a somewhat of a superhero, too.
Awesome. All right, and for my shout-out, I'm going to shout-out about the September 14th episode of Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum, because it featured John Wesley Shipp. And since since I knew he was coming up on Stargirl, I've been holding on to the shout-out for a while. But Michael Rosenbaum does a great interview with John Wesley Shipp, and they talk about all sorts of stuff that I found interesting anyways, because he talks about playing Henry Allen on season 1 of The Flash with Grant Gustin. He talks about the 90s Flash show and it being the most expensive show Warner Brothers had ever done at that time, and how it was also nominated for an Emmy for art direction. I didn't know that. So, and it was also ranked the third top show in the time slot at that time against The Cosby Show and The Simpsons. So it was interesting to hear all that about the old 90s show. And of course,
That's impressive that it did that well and then still didn't make it long term.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the big problems, and I remember this from back when I was watching it, they had problems consistently showing it. I mean, it'd be on for a couple episodes, and it'd be back off again, and then somewhere along the line they change times and stuff. So part of the problems was them showing it, and I think the other part of it was it being so expensive that it only lasted a season. I think if it had been more consistent, it probably would have even got better ratings. But I think that's part of it. And then, of course, he also talked about his time on Dawson's Creek. So, but yeah, it was a very, very good interview. I suggest checking it out. All right, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we've got Batman, Catwoman, Catwoman Lonely City, Nubia and the Amazons, Black Manta, Batman Secret Files Peacekeeper, Batman, Catwoman, Nightwing, Green Lantern, Shazam, Superman Son of Kal-El, The Flash, and of course our DC television shows, Supergirl, Stargirl, Titans, and Why the Last Man. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Ready to move off.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.